Hello, Emily Wright.
Hello, you sound so far away.
I am so far away. I'm on the other side of the Atlantic.
Oh, how... I'm not feeling very well, I understand.
Well, yeah, no, but you know, I don't get to go to New York. I get to go to the sick bay.
Oh, poor you. I do feel for you. I'm sorry. Yes, I'm in New York, and it is pretty cool. I have just managed to smash my phone screen at a blockchain conference. I think I must be the first person ever to have done that. It's just got all too exciting.
That's what blockchain does to a girl, though, isn't it?
It is. It is. Yeah, so that's slightly irritating. But other than that, it's all going very well.
I've heard, though, that you don't need your phone at a tech conference because everyone uses pencil and paper.
Exactly. Telegrams and pigeons and, yeah, who needs a phone? That's what I say. Which is good news because I can't use mine at the moment without getting shards of glass in my thumb. So,
well, I hope this isn't held up to your face and you're not slicing off your face.
Do you know, it is held up to my face, and I think I might be breathing in some shards of glass. So I'm trying really hard not to breathe in too deeply. So, but anyway, maybe we should crack on with chatting about what I've been up to, and then I can get off the phone and out of harm's way.
Yes, I think so. So you flew out on Sunday, is that right?
Yep, that's right. And I have... Well, so on Monday, bright and early, with lots of bagels, I went to the Future of Workplace conference, which was put on by Cretech. And I found that quite enlightening. I've been practicing not using the word interesting. Because I think that in terms of office aesthetic, I'd say that the UK is actually a bit ahead of New York. Not kind of across the board, but in general, you know, lots of the office space here is still pretty functional and traditional, even more so than I think in London. So that was quite cool to see that actually the UK is really streaks ahead on that front. But when it came to things like the technology and office management systems and software, then that's where we're lagging behind, which is exactly what you'd expect. And that's exactly why I'm out here and why we're reporting from here to kind of keep up to date with what everybody's up to. So I spoke to a guy called Glenn Hicks, who is East Coast coordinator of iOffice, which is sort of a software platform and a SaaS platform for office management. And he had some interesting points to make. And this is what he had to say.
This is Emily Wright, features and global editor of EG, and I'm joined by Glenn Hicks, director of East Coast operations for iOffice here in New York. It's the first session of New York Real Estate Tech Week. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you, Emily. Nice to meet you.
So we just heard you talking about what you guys are up to. Could you give a bit of an overview as to what that is? We're here in the first session, we should say, this morning is all around the future of the workspace.
Yeah, sure. So iOffice is unique in a lot of ways. One is we are 100% SaaS based, and we were developed that way 15 years ago, which it was scary because SaaS, software as a service, back 15 years ago, even 10 years ago, no one really knew what that was, right? And luckily, our two owners, Don and Elizabeth, started that way. Now everything's going to a SaaS base, 100% web. Really brings, if I put myself on the customer side, it brings a lot of unique things. One, ROI on implementation, between 60 and 90 days to implement an iOffice system. And then one of the unique things too is we don't have upgrades, we don't have versions. Just like a mobile app you have on your phone, when there's a new enhancement, we push that out to all of our customers free of charge. So again, if you think about what we really try to bring to the marketplace, yeah, we handle all the back-end functions, the lease, the space optimization, and the floor plans, and the maintenance orders and things of that nature. But one of the things that we feel and we think get left out so much is the employee side. You know, how can they easily work and utilize these powerful systems? And so what with that is that employee-facing side with our mobile apps. Almost every single module within our system comes with a mobile app, and it's free. We want every single employee within your workplace to use it and to have access to send that data to you based on just the way that I'm working.
So just for the benefit of our listeners who might not know exactly what it is that the iOffice does, so you've got that system, and then that's what problems are you looking to solve with that system?
Yeah, it ranges from all over the place, from what's my occupancy, how many seats do we have vacant, you know, looking across your entire portfolio or to a specific building, to a specific floor, you know, and then you kind of go off from there is, okay, well, how is this space being utilized? You know, how many offices are occupied and how many are vacant and how many conference rooms, how often are they being utilized, right? And then are we delivering a solution that the employees can easily work in it, the way that they need to work, right? And then based on them just working and doing the things they do, that feeds me as a real estate professional the data to make decisions. If I'm a facility manager, employees no longer have to walk back from the break room to submit a service request because there's a spill in the break room. You can do that on the fly with your mobile app. And then even higher from there is bringing in more of that sensor technology and beacons. And now, as an organization, you know, you almost take away anything. I just come into the office and I'll work, right? And then sensors are picking that up and feeding into these different systems, right, that basically feed me as a professional to make key decisions.
And what is the sort of uptake then of the system across the US now?
Explain that a little bit more.
So just what's sort of the usage, and you know, sort of how many kind of offices are you kind of operating within?
Yeah. So I'll start with globally. We have over 1,400 customers specifically at iOffice, and 860 some here in the US. It is something that again, you saw in my presentation that we still all see a lag in this commercial real estate, the facility management. For some reason, you know, this industry, I don't know if they're a little scared or they're just used to the way they're doing things, but it's almost all these other industries have grabbed the technology side and run with it. And unfortunately, this real estate, this facility management industry, just seems to be lagging a little. And that's sort of what I was trying to get through my presentation, is a call to action. Let's accept it, right? Like, everyone uses this iPhone or Android phone. We use it. We know how to use technology. Let's do it in our real day-to-day jobs now, right? And that's sort of the thing.
And you said something really interesting there. I haven't heard this before. You said we're suffering potentially from the rise of the technocrats. Now, explain that to me, because that makes a lot of sense.
It does, and I can't take credit for the word, but as we talked about it during the prep for the presentation, I was like, yeah, that makes sense. So technocrat is almost, think of it as if they're sitting up on their high seat, and it's like, oh, you know what? IT can do it all, or this group can do it all, and there's one system to rule the world. And I think that's an old school way of thinking, right? There is not a one system to rule the world, especially in these complex organizations. You know, typically there's five or six different key applications. And you also get, you know, these technocrats, for some reason or another, it's like, I'll pick the system, I'll make the decision, and then everyone else will just have to live with it. Again, old school way. That's not how it should be, and that decreases efficiency, decreases communication, because if you're a real estate individual and I'm IT and I make all the decisions and I don't even get your input on how do you need the system to work for you, right? So again, let's get rid of that way of thinking and that culture, and go with more of a collaborative, bring everyone to the table that is going to utilize or needs to utilize the strategic system and decisions.
So who in an organization would be responsible for making sure that collaboration happens, do you think?
Yeah, and I don't think there's an easy answer, first of all. And I don't think it's just one person. I think it's multiple groups, leaders in the organization that ultimately, you know, put their foot down and say, listen, we understand these are the core groups, and this is how we think you need to use a system and what you want out of it, but let's bring those let's bring it to the table and let's fully understand what you need. And then also, let's not forget the majority of the people. They are employees, right? The employees are really driving a lot of this data. And how can we make it better for them so that it makes it better for us?
Well, Ben, thank you so much for joining me. I'm aware that I am keeping you from coffee and bagels, which in New Yorkism, sure, a travesty. So thank you so much.
No, thank you, Emily. Thank you very much.
So I thought that was quite... Now I'm going to replace the word interesting with enlightening and just do that over and over again.
Well, you did have a challenge to throw in a new word, and you've done it.
Oh, I've forgotten that, with all the phone breaking and all that malarkey. But what I really liked about what he talked about was the rise of the technocrat. Have we got ourselves into a situation where everybody and nobody is taking responsibility for technology in big organizations? And that's sort of a more general trend that I'm sure transcends geographical boundaries. I'm sure that everybody's finding that. If they're not, or you think I'm wrong, then let us know. But that this idea of whose responsibility is this, and it can't be one person, but equally it can't be everybody as well. So how do you promote collaboration, particularly with big companies dealing with complex issues? Good stuff. And then I went to a vegan restaurant for lunch, which would not have been my first choice, but Nick Katz, of Akasa, said that it was meant to be very good. And you know what? It was. So met up with him to have a chat.
You can have vegan cheese, and they make it from nuts. That is my vegan knowledge.
Yeah, I did know that. Oh, okay. I did know that, but I didn't have any vegan cheese. I had some vegan meat substitute, which really, I may as well just have stuck to, not going in that direction. But anyway, it was very nice. So if anybody's in New York and is vegetarian, vegan, or feeling adventurous, and it's called Chloe, and it's worth a visit. Anyway, that's the plug. So Nick, anyone that's been following my Twitter will know that Nick Katz turned up for a meeting basically dressed up as Inspector Gadget. I've never seen a more Inspector Gadget Mac in my entire life. And then we had a chat and talked a bit about what he's up to. So Akasa's had a great year, and they're raising at the moment. And
so
Nick...
Akasa first, just in case anyone doesn't know.
So Nick does explain in the podcast, but I will explain too. So Akasa, formerly known as Splittable, is the household sharing platform. It's sort of a household management system and app. It used to be very much just splitting bills, but now it's kind of the whole sort of household management. But it is based around the idea of people that live together, how you pay for things, how you split bills, how you pay your energy providers, all that kind of thing. So he's focused on that at the moment. As I say, they're raising a fund. He was born in England, but he'll be able to tell from the accent, spent a lot of time in the States, and is now kind of a bit between the two. So we were talking around various issues, including the difference between Americans and English, both in terms of us generally, in fact, it was Americans and Europeans, and us generally, but also in terms of how we invest and risk takes and things like that. We talked a bit around the office, and Nick said that, he works out of an apartment in Shoreditch, and he can fit his whole team into this apartment. And he said, for £250 a head per month, it's way cheaper than an office. So we talked a bit around how he doesn't think he'll ever run his business out of an office ever again, which is obviously forward thinking, and I don't know whether that's the future. He did caveat that by saying that it wouldn't be necessarily appropriate for anybody, for everybody even. And then we talked a bit around, what's next for them and for Akasa, and whether he'd potentially be looking to sort of build up the business in the States. And this is what he had to say.
This is Emily Wright, Features and Global Editor for EG, and I'm joined by Nick Katz of Akasa, who's just said to me, literally, can you edit this in case I say something stupid?
Oh, great.
Oh, there you go, there's the icebreaker. So we are in New York. We've just, it's pretty miserable, actually. It's pouring with rain, but we are, I think Nick has reached peak hipster. You're sitting in a coffee bar with your computer. Now, what is that coffee?
This is called a honey bear, which we were just told about. It's basically a latte with honey in it, but I like that as a name, honey bear.
So having a honey bear.
Your coffee ordering didn't go down without a hiccup. A little bit of an issue there.
So this is the thing to all of our UK-based listeners. How would you order a
well, a white Americano, or an Americano for that matter. So I'm a thing here. Everybody looks at me like I'm mad. So yeah. You had to, Nick had to come and translate.
I told the American barista it was a normal coffee with milk, and he then totally understood.
And now I know. People have been looking at me oddly ever since I got here. And coffee is very important, so it's good that I now know what to ask for. Thanks so much for finding some time to... Oh, the other thing we've done today, we've been really busy. We've been for a fully vegan lunch. we should just take ourselves to Brooklyn and stay there.
Yeah. I think a hipster scene in London versus hipster scene in New York would be a really interesting piece, actually.
Yeah, well, that's the first time I've had a vegan... Or whatever it was. I mean, everything was vegan, but you had some kind of a vegan meat substitute or something.
Yeah, it's a taco salad, but with no meat.
Well, there we go. So now that everybody's fully versed in what we've been doing, we can crack on. So, it's New York Real Estate Tech Week. You're out here for that. So you're going to be pitching on Wednesday, right?
Yep. Yeah, we're pitching as one of the 9 finalists in the MIPIM PropTech competition that's being held at MetaProp's offices.
So, for anybody out there who doesn't know what you guys do, I mean, who, as I say regularly, but I really mean it, who is left out there that doesn't know what you guys do? But shall we just give them a bit of an overview?
Sure. So, Akasa is basically a platform to run your home. I mean that from a sort of services perspective rather than a kind of gadgetry perspective, which means we now allow people to track and manage all the various house expenditures that you might encounter and have to deal with. And we also now set up you, at least in the UK, with all the various utilities that you need at your home to run your home. So we now have integrations and partnerships with a number of utility companies, including Octopus Energy, Origin Broadband, and Virgin Media. We set you up with those services, and we automate the payment of each of those services from each individual in the home and move it to the supplier in one lump sum. We also have the ability to pay your TV license and your water bills, and very soon we'll have council tax, which are kind of the core services that any renter needs in the UK.
And so there's a few of the guys in our office actually that use the app, and they don't just use it for household stuff, but use it when they're going on holiday and all that kind of thing. Which, you know, is that always your vision, that people would use it for everything, not just in home?
No, I mean, to be honest, we've really refined our vision to become, you know, the platform to run your home. It's totally fine that people use it for different use cases. We have no problem with that. And especially, you know, up until the 1st of June, you know, when all the app was kind of for splitting expenses, people did use it a lot more for different use cases. But we want the world to know that the space we really want to own and do a phenomenal job in is household management for consumers.
Great. And so you've been, you're not just over here in New York just for the pitch on Wednesday, are you? You've been doing a little bit of reconnaissance, early stage reconnaissance.
Yeah, a little bit of early stage recon.
You are dressed a bit like Inspector Gadget today, which makes me laugh so much. But it is raining.
So. Got the London trench coat and then the kind of standard black New York London uniform.
Yeah, it's a great look. It's a good look. Yeah.
Thank you. So yeah, I mean, you know, my accent probably doesn't deceive me too much here, but obviously I've been in the UK for 7 years now, since 2010. I was born in the UK originally, but I grew up in the States, and had a 7-year sort of institutional real estate career here. And I'm just getting increasingly interested in the US market for a number of reasons. I mean, the UK is our home and will continue to be like the absolute focus of our business. But considering that New York is already our second largest market for users, you know, managing their household expenses, and because we now have a lot more, I guess, kind of real traction, albeit a bit early, with our revenues, a number of U.S. investors are now really interested. The global real estate community seems to be waking up to what we're doing and how we could help their sort of larger building portfolios with all the issues that you have with tenants moving in and out and how you deal with bills and void periods and all that. So I'm doing some early stage recon in the U.S. looking at what it would take to, you know, have some kind of satellite office here. You know, this may be a year from now, but also if, for instance, a U.S. investor were to be interested enough to jump into this a bit earlier, you know, I'm a flexible guy. I want to make sure that we're insulated from any kind of issues that things like Brexit might cause in this sort of 2 to 5 year horizon for, you know, the kind of fundraising market in the UK. I just want to make sure our business is in the best position possible to succeed. And with my network over here and, you know, our organic growth in the market, it just makes sense to spend a little bit of time here understanding what's going on and what the problems are for renters as well as landlords here, just like we're doing in the UK.
Now, listeners won't be able to see, but as you were talking, you actually turned your already American baseball cap into a backwards-facing position. So you're now wearing your baseball cap backwards. Is that because you are embracing the American, you know, the American way?
Yeah, maybe that's a piece of it. As I start talking about America, start becoming American right on the spot.
Well, I'm going to go back to something you said, because you said satellite office, which is interesting because we were talking about that earlier, actually, and you said something which really resonated and I think would be very enlightening to talk about, which is that you don't think you're ever going to operate your business out of an office.
Yeah, that's true. So that's a bit of a misnomer, what I said. By satellite office, what I really meant was satellite home. You know, I used to lease office space, so I have nothing against office space. I love great office buildings, great office space. But, you know, particularly for our business, which is a consumer home management app and platform, as well as the culture we're building, we've chosen to operate out of a live-work unit in London, which is literally like a 1,000-square-foot apartment. You've obviously seen it.
Yeah, it's amazing.
You know, we had to set up our own bills there. We're dog-fooding our own product. We, as a team, have to figure out who's taking the bins out, you know, kind of crap like that. But that's the kind of stuff that our, you know, millennial renters have to deal with all the time. And we like putting ourselves in a position where that is a part and parcel of who we are, what we do, and who we do it for. So in the U.S. and in any office that I ever look for, I've pretty much realized, you know, we want to be in residential property more so than a standard office property. It's not the easiest thing to always sort out or figure out how to do, but, you know, Airbnb is one of my biggest inspirations. They have managed to turn all their rooms into, you know, sort of themed rooms based off what their units are actually like on Airbnb. They're quite famous for the building design they did there. I went so far as to quietly hunt down the designer of Airbnb's offices, even though we're probably 3 to 4 years early for that one. But, you know, I like to line this stuff up early.
Well, there's nothing wrong with that. Do you think that that is something which increasingly, not just, you know, young companies, but people are looking at, you know, this smooth, I mean, the office is already now much more flexible, as we know, and a lot of people will say that, particularly around co-working, that they try and create a more homey feel than an office feel.
Yeah.
I don't think we're ever going to go back into that. You know, remember when everyone said everyone's just going to work from home? I think that's missing the point. You will have a hive. But do you think that more people will start to embrace the home and, you know, live work as a concept?
I think so. I mean, absolutely. I mean, even me and you were just talking about how you kind of work with your job and how I work with my own job.
Mm.
And there is this kind of blurring of the boundaries between the home and the office. And what I found is my team literally said, when I was looking for a new office space and asked them what they wanted, some of these things may come across as a little bit ridiculous, but I'll tell you like what I kind of heard word for word. You know, one person who spent some time in the Valley and is like operates at an extremely high level at a startup, he said he wanted a place to be able to nap, which kind of I took a bit of umbrage to when I first heard, but then I thought it through and understood that really he wanted to be able to stay at the office later at night, wanted to be able to kind of work at his own pace and be able to, you know, sleep if he felt like sleeping so that he could operate at the highest level. Another person said they wanted a kitchen that was all ours, something that we didn't have to share with other companies like you do in a co-working environment. Another person said that they wanted us to have our own space because we wanted to really like develop our own culture. And in hearing these and a few other points, and I listed all these points out, and, you know, I used to search for offices as my full-time job. I looked at all these points and I was like, there's no office space that delivers this. This is literally a home.
Mm.
I'm being asked to move my company into a home. which quietly is what I've always desperately wanted to do, but always assumed everyone would think I was too crazy to actually listen to it and move on. And so we have. And, you know, when you look at it, even just economically, it works out really, really well. Like, you know, the quote-unquote office we're now paying for works out to roughly just under 250 quid a head per month.
Wow.
Which is way cheaper than any co-working space I can find. Now, we're in a very unique position with a 9-person team. You know, I can literally fit my entire company into a 1,000 square foot apartment. When we're 20 or 30 people, certainly when we're 50 or 100 or 200 people...
You need to buy a village.
Yeah, it will become a very, very
a
different thing. Yeah, yeah.
Please have something called a Custerville.
Yeah.
That would be great.
Yeah. Well, with our old company name, I thought of the joke calling it Splittlefields. But we don't want to remember that brand or that old company because it's all about a castle now.
Okay, a castle.
I think it, you know, working out of a home is not for everyone at all. Like, I think it really depends on the type of business you are and the type of stage you are and the type of clientele you have. Like, if you're doing all your business in a B2B environment working with accounting firms, you know, it may not be appropriate to operate out of an office. Like, when you bring over a senior executive from your, you know, customer base, you want to be able to show them what you're all about. Whereas with us and what we're doing, you know, even when a VC comes and visits our offices, we ask them kindly if, you know, they could take off their shoes, because those kinds of things are part of our culture. So I think it depends really a lot on, you know, who your audience is, what you stand for, but it's definitely a really viable alternative to a traditional office space, and it's quite fun and really flexible.
And what's next for you guys? There was some exciting news last week.
Yep.
Congratulations. If you want to elaborate.
Yeah, sure. Thank you very much. We won the UK TN Elevator Pitch Awards for the prop tech category. So, I mean, roughly, I can say that we basically got selected as the top prop tech company in the UK. So we're definitely getting recognized more and more often, sort of externally, which feels great. Always helpful when you're out kind of raising around like we are currently. And I think really what's next is just, it's nothing too complicated. It's really just to continue proving out that we have a really scalable business model, particularly to UK investors. You know, they really want to see our revenue scaling, which is fair enough. I don't really have an issue with that. However, with the type of business that we have and the scalability that we have and our already global user base, I do think that, you know, ultimately the right kind of investment for us is going to come from investors that can kind of envisage us in a land grab opportunity, which I believe we're actually in right now. But I'm very conscious that, like, our current tactic is to continue proving more and more monetization and growth of our monetization. But our overall strategy over the next years is going to be more of a land grab. I believe the home is still an open battlefield. I believe that over the next 5 years, and certainly the next decade, the likes of Amazon and Google and all the big tech players are literally descending deeper and deeper into the home. I think most of them are focused on it from a devices perspective, which I think is really interesting, and a sort of Internet of Things type play. But I believe that that's kind of leaping ahead too far. I think we're leapfrogging some of the absolute basics, which is right now, today, it's still an unmitigated nightmare to set up your home with all the different bills and services that you have to deal with those different suppliers. You may never have dealt with them before. If you're a young person, you're dealing with, you know, like I showed you my house, I have 3 Lithuanians, an American, a Scot, and a French person all living together. We have completely different backgrounds, completely different approaches to how we deal with our own money, how we deal with sharing. And the entire market is becoming a renter's market in the UK. More and more people from all over the world are living together. And, you know, we're just really conscious that we want to keep helping kind of offer like a framework for how you can deal with all these various parties and specifically deal with your money.
Very well said. Don't need to turn up on Wednesday now, that's it. So finally then, how does it, you know, you've obviously spent a lot of time in New York, but back here and you know, I think drip feeding through into Wednesday, we're going to see more and more of the UK contingent arriving. How do you think it's going to feel to have some of those, you know, UK players over here, you know, the Americans and the English sort of, you know, properly being in the same place at the same time since Mipham, I guess, since Mipham in Cannes?
Yeah. Look, I love it. I think the brackish water that ends up coming together when the U.S. and the British mix is actually a really beautiful place to be. I think that the stereotypes that exist for each kind of market and each type of person ring fairly true in a lot of cases.
What are those stereotypes?
I think Americans tend to really enjoy and like big visions, you know, big, hairy, audacious goals, BHAGs, and, you know, tend to fund companies in that kind of space with more funding. They get more wiggle room to change and pivot and make it, but also a lot more companies are created and die. And a lot of American companies are pretty frivolous with their spending. That is not true in every case, so apologies to American listeners, but I do think that that is a thing, right? You can raise more money at higher valuations. You certainly have to pay a lot more for your staff in the United States, but you know, you're just able to do certain things in America that's more difficult to pull off in the UK. In the UK, I think you have more people that are really focused on early stage revenues, on, you know, finding a business with unit economics that stack up like as close to day one or even day zero as possible. I think there's a certain amount of conservatism in the UK investment community. I think things like SEIS and EIS, thank the Lord they exist, because I do not think the UK would be where it is today without those tax advantageous investment schemes, just because of what the culture is like. But it's not all bad, because I actually think the Brits do due diligence really well. I think they really genuinely care about how a business is going to fare over the long term. I think Brits are a lot harder to convince to move away from suppliers that they're already working with, because once a Brit generates a relationship that is lucrative, and I don't even mean in the financial sense only, I mean in terms of a trust sense, in terms of you know, being able to depend on these other people to deliver what they say they're going to deliver, all that stuff. You know, the UK, it's just harder to kind of get in bed with people in the UK. And that is not always a bad thing. Americans jump at stuff and will test things quickly, but they'll also move away from it quite quickly if it's not good enough. Whereas the Brits, it takes a long time to get in there, but once you're in there, it's really good. I actually have an amazing analogy, I believe, that I heard from someone here. So let me just get it straight in my head before I say it out loud. So I am going to lump the UK in with Europe. Sorry, Brexiteers, but I'm still going to do it for this analogy. But what this... I think it was a European that told me this, but they said, if you compare Americans and Europeans to fruits...
Sorry, say that again. If you compare Americans and Europeans to what?
Fruits.
Fruits?
Americans are like peaches, whereas Europeans are like coconuts. So with an American, they're very sweet on the outside. You're able to kind of just bite right into it, and you can kind of get in there really quickly. But it's really, really difficult to get to the absolute core essence of an American. You know, you can make friends super quickly, but it takes a while to really understand who someone is and what they stand for. Whereas in Europe, when you meet a European, they're much more like coconuts. They're impossible to break through, but once you finally make it, it's amazing. It's delicious. You've got the inside of a coconut, got the coconut milk. You know, we just had a coconut at the restaurant.
We did.
And I just think it's a really funny analogy, because I really, you know.
I think it's quite true.
Yeah.
Yeah. So wrapping things up then, on that wonderful analogy, are you a peach or a coconut? And you're still wearing that cap backwards, which would suggest.
I mean, I'm kind of really a chameleon. I would like to believe that that's
so
now
you're an anomaly.
I'm like an unripened nectarine, like a slightly hard skin, a little bit harder to get into. But once you do, it's still pretty tasty and good.
I don't even know what to do with that. Anyway, on that note, thank you so much for joining me. And I'm sure everybody out here will be looking forward to hearing your pitch on Wednesday. And vegan restaurants, Inspector Gadget coats, and nectarine could only be Nick Katz, couldn't it?
And investments from both sides of the pond. We're open.
Well said.
Thank you, everyone.
I mean, anything other than so there you go at this point here. I said that twice in that podcast, I noticed. So beyond drinking the most hipster coffee I think I've ever seen ordered in a restaurant ever, it was a great chat. And I think it's well worth keeping an eye on Nick and Acasa and what they're up to next. And hopefully their funding round will go well and you'll be able to see them maybe popping up in other locations.
Mm.
I also spoke to Nick Wright of KPMG. No relation. His surname also spelled with a W, just in case anybody was wondering. And obviously KPMG is sponsor of Tech Talk Academy. And so we had a chat about that. And also, again, as we're here in New York, for New York Real Estate Tech Week, about the UK and US divide. Well, divide is probably the wrong word, but, you know, the synergy. Ugh, that's an even worse word. Let's just listen to what he had to say.
This is Emily Wright, Feature Zone Global Editor for EG. It's another day in New York. Another honey bear. And another Nick. This time a Nick Wright from KPMG. How are you?
Very good.
How's the honey bear? So
honey bear is actually really good.
So had you picked up on Nick Katz's honey bear ordering?
I had picked up on Nick Katz's honey bear. I thought it's worth the taste.
There you go.
And it's an absolutely delicious coffee.
Good. I'm glad that you're enjoying it. So a very important question to start with. How often do you get asked how you spell your surname?
Oh, don't. It drives me round the fence.
I knew it.
I get so angry.
Because?
You can only spell it one way. And I'm fed up saying Wright with a W.
Or that's, you know, W-R-I-G-H-T.
Oh, just drives me around the bed.
I think people have been listening, so I brought this up a few weeks ago on Tech Talk Radio, when I had to spell my email address and said, you know, Wright with a W, as if it's spelled any other way, but, you know, all the time.
Every time.
Every time.
How are you spelling that?
Is that with a W?
Yeah.
So there you go, everybody. In case you're wondering, it's not just me. It's clearly a fiction that all Wrights share.
Yeah,
so,
afraid so.
There you go. Oh, no, I can't believe I said it. That's my catchphrase. Apparently, I say, there you go, instead of or ah. I've got to stop doing it. The quickest way to stop doing it is to turn over the conversation to you.
Yeah.
So, how are you? It's day three, well, two and a half for me in New York, but it's day one and a bit for you.
Day one, it's not quite 24 hours. It'll be 24 hours about 8 o'clock this evening.
Okay.
It's been really good. It was great. The flight was slightly late last night, but still managed to catch up with the likes of James Dearsley and Ollie Farrago and Nick Katz and Andrew, I can't remember his name. Anyway, that was good. Managed to see them and talk a bit of tech, which is really encouraging. Actually, it got quite deep. We got on to corporate social responsibility and how we should all be doing more to raise the agenda.
Shouldn't we all, though?
So I thought that was quite
interesting. What's the plan, then?
Well, Nick was being quite interesting about giving 1% back to increasing social mobility and working with other organisations and looking outside the norm. But we all agreed it's difficult if you've got a small business.
Yes. So I guess, what do you do in that scenario?
It's really difficult. You've got to think very hard about your morals, about what's right for your business, what's right for social mobility, and how you work around. You know, if you've only got 5 people and you're employing another person, you can't just get someone out of the goodness of your heart. You have someone who's the right fit for the business.
Mm.
So we're all challenged with it.
No, I'm not going to say, well, there you go again. Oh, honestly, it's such a, you know, it's in my head now, so there you go. So talk to me a bit about your global PropTech survey. That's exciting.
Thank you. It is very exciting. We launched it 3 weeks ago, and we're going to close it on Friday the 13th. Auspicious.
Why are you closing on Friday the 13th?
Because we're going to push it. I'm pushing it here and tomorrow at the summit. Get a few more people to sign up to it, and then we'll close it on the Friday when we get back. So that makes sense.
Unlucky for some, but not for everyone.
I think for
certainly
KPMG's
not for KPMG.
It will be fantastic. it's gone really well, and
we've had a huge response rate.
We're over 325, I think, at last count. It's a really good spread. We've got that number of responses from 25 different countries, 40% from EMEA, 30, I'm going to challenge my math now, 35 from the Americas and 25 from Asia Pacific. So that's enough to make some decent samples to work from and look at kind of the impact of it. The sort of initial findings are that people are very much in favour of tech to change their businesses. Bear in mind we went to the corporate real estate market and tech providers as well. So I don't think that's a huge surprise, but the number's very high. So I'm encouraged by that. I think that the idea that tech is an innovation and tech is a means of doing business better and more efficiently is resonating around the world. And we'll wait to see how the numbers develop for other questions and see if there's any gaps anywhere.
But have you, so far looking at the responses, have there been any massive surprises?
I don't think so. When you get under the skin of it, some of it's a bit more surprising. There was quite a spike with different types of tech, and I think autonomous vehicles in America were people were more interested in that than in Europe, for example, and maybe that's just because it's a bigger deal here than it is in Europe. Mm. So there's bits in there that I think will be interesting.
So this question is going to sound really aggressive, and I don't mean it to, but why are you here? It's lovely to see you, but why is it you've travelled out to New York Real Estate Tech Week?
I think a couple of reasons. First is that from a KPMG perspective, this is a core part of where we're going with our real estate team, and that's important. It picks up on the opportunities we have and the conversations we're having with our corporate real estate clients, institutional investors into real estate, and we're beginning to have those conversations with their senior management teams about what does tech mean for them, what does innovation mean, and how should they be engaging with technology. Mm. I think they're wrestling with two ends of the spectrum here. You've got money coming into corporate real estate from investors, and then how occupiers are using space. Both of those ends of the spectrum are being impacted by different technologies, and the real estate world is sort of waking up to that and beginning to move into an acceptance phase. So we're at the point of having some interesting conversations with a number of players and helping them to guide them on what their strategies look like. So because of that, we also have a team, I think you've met a couple of them, who are down with the tech community and the startup community, and that means we've got a foot in the corporate real estate camp and a foot in the startup camp, which helps with trying to understand what the challenges are from both sides. Mm. And that means bridging the gap slightly between that knowledge and understanding. So long way of answering the fact that I'm here because I think it's right, there's a lot of UK people here, and it's right to follow on that representation and be part of that community out at Lucas Proctor. And I think also an opportunity to understand more about how technology is interacting with the US corporate real estate market and meet some of the tech businesses here as well.
What sort of tech businesses have you got your eye on? Is there anything in particular?
There isn't anything in particular at the moment. Because I think I'm still slightly wedded to the corporate real estate market, I'm still very much looking for better ways of analysing big data, better ways of looking at data analytics and processing, crunching numbers in order to help that performance-driven data decision-making that a lot of our clients are looking for. So anyone who's doing that, I'm interested in.
You were at our Tech Talk Live event at the White Collar Factory, and Zach Schwartzman from Metaprop NYC, obviously putting on everything this week, said the sorts of businesses that they were interested in were, I can't remember the exact quote, but it was, the things that bore people at cocktail parties, that's where the money is. Is that something that you agree with?
I think he was very smart with that, because he is right. It's some of those more tedious,
just say, so there you go, that's what I do when I can't think of what to say clearly.
Regular, it's the processes, it's those guys who just do something that's boring and regular and process driven, that if you can find a tech alternative to it, then yes, that's potentially where the most opportunity is going to lie. Something that's whizzy and exciting and sexy, I just don't think it's going to have that much scale and scope in the industry we're in. And again, some of the corporate clients we're talking to, they're looking to align themselves with businesses or tech companies that they can either collaborate with, invest in, work alongside, who are doing something that they already do. but they do it in a process-driven technology way or in a more efficient way that can be done by normal people. So, yeah, I kind of agree with him.
Yeah.
But it's what level of tediousness do you go to with it?
I mean, who knows? I suppose depends on the individual threshold.
Exactly, exactly. But I tell you what, what's impressive is most of the people I've come across from that startup are just super clever and super committed, super entrepreneurial. They just blow your socks off.
Mm.
And I think the commitment that all these people show when you talk to them is just amazing. It's really impressive. It gives me huge excitement and faith for the future that there are all these businesses out there with these young guys doing amazing stuff.
What do you think that future will look like in five years? We've got so many people doing such, you know, doing all this stuff, and not everybody can survive, I wouldn't have thought, you know, but what do you think is going to rise to the surface?
I mean, my hope is that we'll see a sudden spurt of adoption that will take place kind of, let's say, post-MIPIM next year, so kind of March, April time. I think certainly if some of the people we're talking to at the moment get their organisation and their strategy right, you can see them engaging with technology companies and businesses, and then that taking a few months to get going, and then I think you'll start seeing some announcements kind of spring next year.
Mm.
So my excitement is that that will start going much faster than anyone's predicted at the moment, and we'll suddenly see a few businesses leading from the front. And once that happens, the real estate businesses that are leading from the front will be firmly supporting certain technologies. And I think once those technologies start getting hold and really building up those key customers, then you'll see that there may be some mergers, some changes, some refinements of some of the tech businesses out there. Because there are a number who are doing different but similar things, and there isn't a single one-through solution. Every client they're speaking to has a different requirement and a different need. So therefore, there's room in the market for lots of different suppliers and operators. I think once the adoption gets going, that'll narrow a bit, and some of these guys will end up being consumed into other businesses. That's no bad thing.
Yeah. And, I mean, do you think that people fully appreciate what you guys are doing, what KPMG is doing, what you're doing, and your involvement, and that bridging of the gap that you were talking about earlier?
I don't know, I hope so. It's certainly interesting to be, you know, involved with some of the leading lights in prop tech like yourself, Emily, because we get a nice...
It's because I keep buying everybody honey bears, that's what it is.
So it's encouraging that, you know, you recognise what we're doing, and also other people in the industry, so from the tech perspective. And as I said earlier, we're beginning to get that buy-in from our clients as well. They recognise that we're doing something a bit unusual and different to others out there. And having a foot in both camps allows us to provide that strategic view on the industry, and not just from a real estate perspective, but from all the other industries we work in. So one of the things that we've been driving from our business is that actually we know the occupiers of real estate better than the real estate companies do, because we're in their boardrooms. We're in FTSE 250 boardrooms of banks, manufacturing businesses, pharma businesses, retail businesses, logistics businesses. And they're all being impacted by technology in some way, shape or form. And we're helping them with their strategies. So why wouldn't we share that information with our real estate clients to help them understand what their corporate occupiers are doing? And then the other foot in the tech space allows us to help those businesses grow and evolve, but also to communicate back the difficulties and challenges that they face when talking to corporate real estate.
I know that we're in New York, but just sticking back to the UK briefly and to the event that's coming up on the 15th of November, Tech
Very
Talk
exciting.
Academy.
Yeah.
So you guys are obviously on board with that now. What is it about that drew you to get involved, and what are you hoping to see off the back of that programme now?
Well, the first one was really good, and we were delighted to come on board at the last minute as a partner for that. And it was great to see, you know, a strong panel in there, some decent, robust discussions going on from various parts of what we call that real estate world. I think the academy bit that we've got coming up on the 15th is very exciting. partly because there's genuine money behind me.
Yeah, just to remind everybody, it's up to £150,000 available.
Which is going to make people very keen and excited. And therefore, I imagine, I don't know, you closed the nominations recently. I have no idea who's on that list. But
I imagine
they're all pretty good and exciting businesses.
Yeah.
And to be able to have a look at those and be able to fund them with a prize, with an amazing panel of judges, what's not to like about that? So from our perspective, I think, and I'm going to speak EG up, I think you're doing the right thing. I think, you know, it's a great opportunity in this space. I think that you're pushing forward in an area that is really important, and you're doing it in a really interesting way. So we're delighted to partner. From a KPMG perspective, we're putting a lot of effort into this space, and it's important that we're recognised, again, going back to both foot in each camp, from either side, that we're very much engaged in it.
Well, it's going to be a great event, November the 15th, as we say, and look forward to seeing as many people there as possible. I think there are still tickets available.
Final plug.
Oh, well, you know, it won't be the last. Final plug, that's optimistic. So, last question then, what do you think is going to be your highlight here in New York over the next 2 to 3 days?
Apart from this.
And again, it's the honey bear. I am convinced of it.
It's made me all velvety and soft, Jack.
You're giving Nick Katz a run for his money, honestly. He described himself as an underripe nectarine.
Genuinely, just being involved tomorrow, I think it's going to be fascinating. It's already just bumping into people around here and seeing, having conversations with the likes of Dan, the likes of James. It's very exciting. Everyone's excited to be here. And I just feel that. And I think that's going to be really evident tomorrow. And, you know, whilst I've got meetings with various people, it's just going to be part of that community. I think will be really interesting. And there's some great speakers, some great subjects being talked about. So it's a learning experience more than anything else.
Well, thank you very much, Nick Wright with a W. Thank you so much for joining me, and look forward to catching up over the next few days.
Thank you.
That was Nick. Another Nick. Two Nicks.
I know, it's all very confusing.
Yeah.
But not as confusing as blockchain. Yeah. I mean, I don't even know how people would understand 2%. And I felt very encouraged at this morning's blockchain. So this will come out tomorrow. So yesterday's blockchain conference. I ran into James Dearsley, and he's actually speaking at the conference this afternoon. And this was after the first couple of sessions, and I said to him, well, that's blockchain. And he said, I didn't understand a word of it, and I should be saying that on the panel to try and explain to people that even though it might sound straightforward, it's still not straightforward, and blockchain is spoken about in a language that people find really difficult to understand. And I would agree with that. I think there's obviously, you're much more of an expert than I am on it, and there's obviously a lot there to grasp, and maybe it's a question of once the penny drops, then that's it and you have a much better idea. But I was chatting to a chap called Bill at the blockchain conference. He wasn't expecting to be podcasted, and I wasn't expecting to podcast him, but he said to me that he could explain it to me in less than 10 minutes. I said, right, well, if you think you can do that, let's do it on a podcast. So I won't play you the whole 10 minutes, but this is a bit of a bridged version of Blockchain 101.
Blockchain Bill. Here he is.
This is Emily Wright, Features and Global Editor for EG, and I'm joined today by Bill Staniford, who is a tech entrepreneur. He wasn't expecting to be podcasted. I'm going to be honest, I wasn't expecting to podcast him either. But we are at the blockchain event as part of New York Real Estate Tech Week.
International Blockchain Real Estate Association.
Yes, exactly. And you just asked me a very good question, which is, you know, what do you know about blockchain? And I said, well, nothing, not much, is probably generous. And you started to explain it to me in such a clear way that I thought, well, why not explain it on a podcast? So, take it away. You were saying that there's a question that has to be asked first.
No, I say that the first thing that people need to understand is why cryptocurrencies exist, right? And cryptocurrencies are currencies that are built on the blockchain. And so I actually try to keep this as simple as possible, right?
Thank you. I mean, I really appreciate that.
So the first thing I ask everyone to understand is just that if you take the U.S. dollar, right, that is currently the global reserve currency, and you know, it wasn't always the global reserve currency, right? It used to be the pound sterling, and it may not be the global reserve currency in the future. That depends on a bunch of different factors, which we're not going to get into right now. But the fact of the matter is, since the inception of the dollar has lost about 99.9% of its value. Now, that's just a fact, right? So it's there's no emotion tied to that or anything. And basically, it is because governments devalue their currencies, and they always have. And I think the one thing that I can tell you with a great deal of certainty is that the U.S. dollar will be devalued further, that it will continue to lose its value going on in the future. So you can understand why there is a desire to create an alternative currency, correct? I mean, that's the basics of this. So when you're talking about cryptocurrencies, why do they exist? The first thing is that they are, it is hard to counterfeit, right? And there's a finite amount of them that is controlled by an entity other than the government itself. So there's never going to be a situation where Bitcoin's going to be flooded, or there's going to be a massive creation of Bitcoin or Ethereum. And a lot of the cryptocurrencies that are created right now have set amounts that can be ever created. And therefore, the likelihood of it being devalued goes down. And that is the basis of why cryptocurrencies exist.
Okay, and this is going to be a question that might well give away just how little I know about this, but will that always be the case that there will be a finite figure on it? You know?
Let me tell you this. And any time that a new cryptocurrency is created, that is one of the things that everyone looks at first, like to ensure that there's that it cannot be devalued. Like, and you can't just create it out of thin air.
Right. It's not like just printing money out.
Yeah, no one would participate in any cryptocurrency that had the capacity or the ability to just print ad infinitum.
Okay.
And so that is really one of the critical elements as to why cryptocurrencies should exist.
Right. Okay. So I think I get that now. So that's question one. So then I'm beginning to see it, but if you can explain in just as clear a terms, you know, what, you know, blockchain, and I can see why it exists, but how, you know, I mean, Ragnar was just talking earlier about, you know, applying to real estate, and, you know, how do you see that panning out? Because
okay,
it's not
so,
like it's
so
caught
let's,
on
I'm
in
not
any great
a,
way.
So real estate is a subsection. So, I will talk about this is, and again, I believe that blockchain technologies are a little bit of a Rorschach test where people see what they want to see in it. Okay, so the way I see cryptocurrencies, or I will say blockchain technology, is that I break it into three categories. The first one is the cryptocurrencies, which we just discussed. A second group is called what I call utilities, and the third group is what I call securities, right? And that's basically it. That's how blockchain is currently being used. Cryptocurrencies, to me, make a lot of sense to a certain point. So if you have Bitcoin, Ethereum, even Litecoin, there is a certain need to have competing technologies in the cryptocurrency space up to a point. In my mind, after you get past 7 cryptocurrencies, it stops making sense and starts to become a scam. And, you know, there's a lot of scamminess in this industry, which I think everyone needs to be, or at least I am not naive about. I am very understanding that there are lots of scams or lots of potential for scams. And when people want to create their own cryptocurrency, they're basically giving themselves the right to just print money out of thin air. And so Bitcoin has the first mover advantage. Ethereum, I believe, is better technology and will eventually surpass Bitcoin. We can go into that in greater detail. The second one is utilities, where a utility coin is when the coin... Okay, so a cryptocurrency is when you're exchanging the coin for a good or a service, right? So you know you had a coin, you gave the coin away, and now you no longer have that coin, and you received a good or a service. That is a currency. A utility is when you use the coin and you put it up. You never lose ownership of that coin, but your ownership of that coin enables you to unlock a good or a service. And there's a couple of coins and companies that do this. storage space, technology storage space is one of the areas that this occurs in. This, in my mind, has about 50% of these are scams. And again, the reason why I believe that they're scams is that there's no legal recourse, right? So if the company that you purchase this utility with, you get to use that service until that company no longer exists. If that company no longer exists, there's no legal recourse and you're out of luck. Okay, so then the third one is what I'm most interested in right now is, I call the security, where the coin itself is replacing stocks. And this is the disintermediation of the FTSE, the NASDAQ, the NYSE, and whatnot. And I believe that there's a huge need for this, and it's actually a much more efficient model for fundraising, and just want to make sure that it is, in my mind, because I'm a U.S. citizen, I want to make sure that any coin that I'm working is legally enforceable within the United States of America, right? So that if someone actually purchases a token, they will gain ownership of that company that is legally enforceable within the United States of America. And that's a security which I believe is the most interesting aspects right now.
Well, it's 7.5 minutes, and I think that that's the best overview of blockchain I've heard in 7.5 minutes. To be honest, it's the first one I've heard. So, you can't lose. Thank you so much for joining me. Really appreciate it, and I'm sure that all of our listeners will be very interested to hear and will feel very enlightened. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm still not sure I understand it, but I do feel a bit more confident around this whole idea of why cryptocurrency exists. And that, for me, was quite an important realization of actually understanding, well, what the why behind blockchain. So if anybody's still struggling, then I listened to that full podcast, should be up online. And I think that that idea of exactly why we do it, why cryptocurrency exists, is a great starting point. That's it from me so far. It's been great. I think it's been brilliant to see so many UK folk out here. The blockchain conference continues. As somebody said earlier, someone who's coming from Stockholm, he said to me, I've invested 8 hours of my life in this day. So if I don't leave knowing everything about blockchain, I'll be furious. So I'll catch up with him afterwards and see whether it paid off. And then tomorrow is the big day. Tomorrow is the MIPIM PropTech Day, which looks to be, well, it's going to be jam-packed. And I shall be talking to people throughout the day, chatting to judges, startups, trying to get a sense of, you know, what's next and how UK and European firms are viewed in the States. And then on Thursday, down to Brooklyn for a startup meetup and meetings and podcasts galore in between, so I shall keep you updated.
Fantastic. So this is really just part one of the Transatlantic Tech Talk radio, and next week we'll have some more, but you'll be back here in the studio with me, I hope.
I'll be back with you in the studio, not breathing in shards of glass and a broken mobile phone screen. Hopefully I'll have come back with lots of really interesting, I'm just going to use the word, interesting insight and stuff that hopefully people can, whether they were here or not, can use and sort of take away with them. And there's so much happening in New York. It's obviously such a vibrant city. And London and New York are compared so often. I think it's just useful to see the two worlds collide a bit this week. And that's what I've been enjoying.
Excellent. And I guess it'd be good to hear from you, from the MIPIM side of things, just what we might expect to see brought over for MIPIM UK and also for MIPIM Cannes, if we're going to see more of a tech feel through those as well. Obviously, we'll be at both of those with our own tech hats on, if there is such a thing as a tech hat. But it'd be good to see if there's more people who will be coming over from stateside to both the UK and maybe the south of France.
I will definitely ask all those questions and we'll report back. And anything else anybody else wants to know, you can easily contact me either via Twitter, EmilyW_9, or by email, emily.wright@egi.co.uk.
Excellent. Well, enjoy the rest of the show and safe flight back, and we will see you back in Blighty next week.